Baltimore Northwest with your host, Eddie Rye Jr. We're going to start right up. My first guest is Jonathan Johnson, who's president of the Tacoma NAACP. That's Tacoma, Washington. You know, there's a Tacoma, Maryland as well. They spell it with a K. So I always put Tacoma WA to make sure people know that. But people around here know who Jonathan Johnson is. He's been doing a magnificent job in serving the people before he became president of the NAACP. So welcome to Urban Forum Northwest again, President Johnson. And why don't you just share with our listeners a little bit about the Tacoma NAACP, a little of the history, and then let's go to talk about some of the services and programs that you're currently providing for the people.
Sure. Thank you so much. You know, the Tacoma NAACP has been around actually before the Seattle branch showed up, but there's always that controversy. I'm not going to raise any controversy, but we were out here first. But nonetheless, we've been working with people in the community, doing the things. We work on three levels. One, we try to provide response when people have complaints of discrimination. Two, we want to try to get ahead of those and work to program the kinds of things that help the community reach out with and work with us to make sure people are treated properly. And thirdly, when things turn bad, we want to make sure we rally the community around what needs to be done to get those items repaired. So all of our work in Tacoma branch is done through our committees. We have multiple standing committees. We have people in the community that volunteer to help on our social justice, our economic development, legal redress, education committee. We also have internal committees that do things like our finance committee, but those are the primary committees that do the things that need to be done in our community. But we also work with other organizations in the community because we can't stand alone in this. And I talk with friends about, the history of Tacoma. We have another organization, the Black Collective, for more than 50 years that has been bringing people together and on a weekly basis doing things that are very, very powerful. So if I were looking at a roster for one of the sports teams, I would know we'd want to draft the Black Collective because they'd be one of the people that would have the ability to run the ball, run long, and do what needs to be done. But we have been working on a number of issues. One of the things we've got going on this in a couple of weeks is we've got an effort. We've been coordinating with several organizations in the community to make sure our education is working well. We know after COVID, we've had students showing up at schools and difficulties going on in the classroom that have made education really complicated. Schools are losing students because we have a culture, as I call it, a culture of disrespect and a culture of dysfunction. And so we've got an event that's going to be at, we'll give you the details on it later, but we've got an event covering that. We're working on economic development, coordinating with our state area conference. We've got an event coming up on the 25th for that as well. So we've got things that are going on in the community, but much of what we do in Tacoma NAACP is done behind the scenes. We don't advertise private information about what people are facing, but when we come public, we know we've got to get some things done. And so when it came to the trial of Manny Ellis, that's where we had to do more behind the scenes things. And we're working to make sure that we get things done that prevent those kinds of things from happening in the future. So we're doing two things. One, dealing with the immediate, and also looking down to see how we prevent those things from happening in the future. But yeah, we're constantly busy, constantly doing things on behalf of the citizens of Tacoma and Pierce County. If you'd like, I can tell you what we've done for the Manuel Ellis case, because that's one of the things that has been very instrumental for us right now.
A lot of my listeners would be very interested in hearing that, especially is what we saw captured on the cell phones by the people. And it's too bad that things turned out like they did. But why don't you just share that with our listeners? They definitely want to hear about it.
Well, I sure will. Well, the Tacoma branch, as I indicated, we wanted to have a We want to chart a comprehensive course for dealing with this. This problem for one man is significant, but for the community, we have multiple people who have been injured by these kind of behaviors that have been going on. So our comprehensive effort, led by our second vice president, coordinating with multiple organizations, we put together a group that actually was started by Reverend Christopher, but our first vice president, Lyle Quassim, he is a major effort forcing here in here, but I also give Reverend Christopher the vision to start assembling this. Anyway, we started working with organizations, including the Ministerial Alliance, the Tacoma Pierce County Black Collective, A. Philip Randolph, the Associated Ministries of Tacoma Pierce County, New Generations, Ceasefire, Legally Black, the Tacoma Urban League. And at the time, we were also working closely with the Black Panther Party and the Black Prisoners Coalition. So we brought this group together because we wanted to hear their voices and make sure that when we said something needed to be done, there would be no space between us so that they could be, so we could be divided and conquered. So we put together three demands after this, after the trial came up. Number one, we wanted the police department to dismiss those officers. We didn't want people on the street who were known for being detrimental to public safety. Second, we wanted to seek judicial review of Judge Brian Chertoff and with the alleged misconduct that I think any reasonable person could find. The third, we wanted to have the city seek the U.S. Department of Justice investigation of the police department, not for what's going on necessarily right now, but for the history of what was going on. And our intent was to make sure that our current police chief had all the tools necessary to root out those areas of racial bias that still may be there from years of practice. And I say this because when I entered the Army in 1974, I entered an army that had many general officers who were in the army when the army was segregated. They had been influenced by that, and to root that out required constant effort to get that fixed. Our police department has had years of practice and that culture that needs to be fixed. So that's our second, our third issue. And our fourth, we wanted to make sure that civilian oversight of our police department was taken care of. We have efforts that have been going on to have civil oversight, but it was more of a check the box after we've done what we wanted to do. And we wanted to make sure that we had civil oversight. Well, shortly after we approached the city with our demands, the three police officers resigned. So we then went to our three additional demands that we're looking at. And we continue to pursue those remaining demands with the understanding that policy change is necessary, but it's not sufficient. And I'll say it this way. The law was put in place for police officers to be prosecuted when they had misconduct or when they were accused of misconduct. However, the jury pool had, just like those general officers, had been living their lives in a world where police were given the benefit of the doubt no matter what. So for them to think that they would have the authority to say, no, that just doesn't look right, I think needs to be one of the things that we're focused on. So as the Tacoma branch is moving forward, yes, we want to support making sure that our laws that we have in place that support civil rights continue to be there. But we also want to make sure that we pursue informing the public and working with the public in every way we can to make sure they understand why we needed to change that law and what that law means, not only to Black people in the community, but to everyone in the community who could be subject to misconduct by the police department. But that's going to take some effort. But we really believe that that has to be done. At least I believe that has to be done. So anyway, we continue to work on those issues, and we're focused on events to do that. In the past, we've had events working with certain with community organizations to make sure that we continue the conversation across racial lines. If we don't have equal partners on both sides of this conversation, we'll be fighting by ourselves. And any war fought by yourself is not a good place to be. And this is a long term. This is a campaign, not an individual battle. We need to make sure people know that we can get this done. And we start in our schools. We start with the culture that's going on in our classrooms. And we need to have a culture of success. And that's why we're doing the things that we're doing to try to plant the seeds of justice in the younger generations and let that grow over time.
Now, recently, I think one of the officers involved with the murder of Manny Ellis was hired by, a county right close to Pierce County, where Tacoma is.
Thurston, yes, Thurston County.
Thurston County, and he didn't last very long. What happened there?
Well, the letter that was produced by the Thurston County sheriffs indicated that he had received threats and other things, and that may well be. But I realized that when I apply for a job, if I apply and people don't want me, I'll go someplace else. In my own opinion, I think he got a better offer and took it, and that was the best way to do it. Again, that's my personal opinion. No justification, no evidence to prove that, but I thought it was a smart move by the sheriff department to say what he said afterwards, and that is they didn't realize the amount of energy hiring someone like that would provide that would counter the police department's or their sheriff's department's efforts. So it's good that we're getting the word out that people cannot do what they have been doing without accountability. But clearly, the public was asked to support what we're doing. They're coming forward and supporting us. But when you get down to the jury room, we have people who have been taught that you always give the police the benefit of the doubt. And we have a lot of work to do to change that. So we didn't win the battle. We're continuing to move forward to see if we can win the campaign.
Well, we see justice being done in Mississippi with the Goon Squad.
Oh, you saw that.
These guys there, the two brothers didn't die. Manny Ellis died. But I think this culture is just all across. Unfortunately, it seems to be all across the country.
And well, I agree.
And Black folks always end up being the victims. You hardly ever hear about whites being brutalized by the police department. If anybody knows the cases, let me know, because if they've occurred, it's been a well kept secret. So,
absolutely.
But there's a person that's going to be my next guest. Her name is Maisha Barnett. Mm-hmm. And I think that her grandfather had a mark and did some things in Tacoma. So I don't know if Maisha can hear me, if she's on right now, but I wish she'd let the record straight. And then I'll get with my technology later. I gave her the misspelling of your name, and I will be corrected, sir. Believe me.
I appreciate that.
I don't know if she's on yet. But anyway, we'll talk to her. Maisha, are you on right now?
Yes. Hi, Eddie. Hi, Jonathan.
Yeah, I got Jonathan Johnson. Maisha is also a regular participant in the Tacoma Pierce County Black Collective calls on Saturday mornings as well. What did your grandfather do in Tacoma? He had some notoriety in Tacoma before he got to Seattle?
No, actually, that was my great-grandfather.
Great-grandfather. Okay, I gotta correct that one, too. I got him down as being your grandfather. I thought he was your great-grandfather.
Right. So my great-grandfather was John Connor, and my grandfather, Powell Barnett, married John Connor's daughter. He was smart enough to do that.
Okay, so now we got it straight. So anyway, as I've indicated, Jonathan, Maisha Barnett is a regular member on there too. So Jonathan, I'm glad you set the record straight. So hang on, Maisha. But is there anything you'd like to say in closing, any kind of motivating information you want to leave with our people to get them on point? Because we got to pay attention and got to get involved.
Absolutely. Well, the first thing I'll say is on the 23rd of April, we are going to be meeting at 6:30 at Evergreen College Tacoma, and we're looking at how do we bring our school culture to a culture of success. It's a journey, and it's not something that can happen overnight. The analogy I would give is Microsoft and Apple provide updates slowly, but we don't even know it. But when we get a small update, we're safer. We need to do that because the folks who are opposing these ideas, if you put it out too big, they will find a reason to oppose it. But if these are constantly coming, they're going to have to keep up with us rather than us trying to keep up with them. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing on the 25th, we have the State Area Conference coming down to help us with some efforts that we've been working with on community reinvestment. And we're trying to do our very best to make sure that our State Area Conference is welcome and that we bring in as many people possible to help them become economically viable. So we're working those two issues right now. There are other things that are coming on, but go to our website at 253-NAACP. We have meetings that are posted on our calendar. We're trying to make sure that Tacoma knows first, Tacoma NAACP is here. We want to hear from you, and we want to support you so that you can be successful. And that's our goal, that's our mission, and we will do our very best to do that for you.
Well, Tacoma, Washington, NAACP President Jonathan Johnson, thank you very much. I will correct the spelling of your name. Keep up the good work. And if I don't see you, I will look for your name on the Black Collective call this Saturday morning at 8:30. So thank you very much.
Yeah, and we give you one of those online hugs. We get a hug at the door.
There you go. Thanks, Ellen.
That's
She's
right.
good. She's good at that. Okay. Okay, thanks, Jonathan. Well,
Right,
Eric,
thank
we're going to
you.
take this break and come back with Miss Maisha and Butch Harrison and Barney Hilliard.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend Port Gen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
At Sound Transit, we not only connect more people to more places, we're making life better for all. We're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire region of opportunities, like jobs and school. If you have an Orca card, you can just tap and go. We have reduced fares for seniors and riders with disabilities. For adults with lower incomes, check out Orca Lift and pay just a dollar for your ride. To plan your trip or to learn more, visit us at soundtransit.org.
Exploring new territory every day. This is Alternative Talk 1150.
All right, Eddie Wright Jr. back at Urban Forum Northwest. I want to thank Sound Transit's Office of Civil Rights, Equity, and Inclusion, the City of Seattle's Purchasing and Construction Services Department, SeaTac Broad Group, LLC, and the Port of Seattle's Diversity Contracting Office. My next guest is Maisha Barnett, while we wait for Butch Harrison and Barney Hilliard. So, Maisha, you gave me a little history lesson a minute ago, and I know that your family had roots early on in Tacoma. Could you explain to my listeners exactly how Powell Barnett got to Seattle and what your great-grandfather did in Tacoma?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Thank you for having me. Well, starting with Powell Barnett, who we are here to speak about today, he first moved to Seattle after marrying my grandmother, Catherine Vail Khanna, who was the youngest living child of John and Mary Khanna. And John and Mary were Pacific Northwest African American pioneers in the city of Tacoma. They moved there in 1883. So they lived in both Tacoma, but also had a 157-acre homestead in what's today's Federal Way. And most recently, I won a battle with the city of Federal Way. They decided to name a city facility after them.
Well, my next question is, what about the 157 acres?
I have it all mapped out. In addition to that, they also own lots and blocks in Tacoma. So they had Kana's Addition in Tacoma, Kana's Lake Tracks at today's Joint Base Lewis-McChord, and died owning land in Fairbanks, Alaska. So it's a research project that keeps me really busy.
Well, you know, that's quite a bit of property. Then you guys, your family didn't get any of that property at the end?
No, which is why I'm very busy.
Yeah, well, you should be. Now, the other thing is that there's going to be a big event on the 27th at Leschi Elementary School. And there's going to be, I guess, a rededication for your grandfather in terms of having a picture of him, a poster or something like that. Would you explain that to our listeners, what's going to be happening on that Saturday?
Yes. So on Saturday, April 27th at Leschi Elementary School, which is located in Leschi neighborhood. For those who don't know it, it's right at the end of Yesler Way. So if you were to take Yesler from downtown, travel all the way east to 32nd, you'll run right into it. The school, many of generations of my family attended Leschi Elementary, and because my grandfather was very active in the community, the children of Leschi Elementary nominated the park named after him to be named in his honor in 1969. And there was also a portrait of him that was previously in the school. And as we know, new people come along, things change, and somehow it disappeared off the wall. So many years later, my father brought it to their attention and inquired about it, where it was finally found, stored away. So this will be a celebration rededicating the portrait, which is now back on the walls at Leschi Elementary School.
Now, can you take us through the program? Would it be like a formal ceremony? What will occur?
Right. We're really lucky. We have former Keene County Council member Larry Gossett has agreed to speak. And Larry interviewed my grandfather in the 60s. In fact, it's recorded. And I've had the pleasure of listening to my grandfather's voice, which you can find at the UW Special Collections Library. So Larry Gossett, Dr. Reverend Phyllis Bamonte, and my cousin Karen Jones will present. We'll also have a physical display there, and directly afterwards, immediately after the formal ceremony, is when the Butch Harrison and the Good Company will perform their annual concert at Garfield. I'm sorry, at Leschi Elementary School.
Okay. We also have Barney Hilliard, legendary Barney Hilliard. Before we go to Barney Hilliard, Maisha, your dad was a legend in Seattle. He was the founder of Black Arts West. So can we give him a little bit of the conversation to Douglas Barnett?
Yes. So, well, you just listed the three people whose shadow I'm in. Beginning really with my great grandfather, John Kana, then Powell Samuel, who really made a distinctive mark in his community, and my father, who was very interested in theater and was a founder, director, and also performer at Black Arts West. And I've come to learn that he influenced and made a positive impact on a lot of lives here in Seattle, and people who went on to act on the large screen. So folks like John Amos were friends of his, as well as Quincy Troupe and people whose names escape me right now, but you know, they were just my dad's friends. And after his death in 2019, the Historic Central Area Art Community District, they led an effort to rename the street after him. So it's an honorary street name after Douglas Hugh Barnett, located at 34th and 35th and Union, which was close to where the Black Arts West Theater was located.
That's exactly where it was located, between 34th and 35th on Union. We had a theater when we had a neighborhood and a community. So I want to go to Barney the Sax Man to talk about the fundraiser at Les Chai. This event will occur after the formal event you're having for your grandfather. But Barney Hilliard, I understand you're going to be hooking up with Good Company and others. So why don't you share with our listeners exactly what will be going on in that fundraiser that you've been doing over the years?
Well, as you mentioned, it's an annual fundraising concert, and it's always on the last Saturday in April. So this Saturday, that's coming up on April 27, starting at 1 o'clock and ending at 3 o'clock. And the whole idea is to raise funds for the homeless students and low-income families at Les Chai Elementary School. And for the last several years, we've been fortunate enough to have the great Butch Harrison band playing for us during the concert. Butch Harrison plays keyboards, trumpets, and vocals, and he has other fine musicians with him. And I think last year and also this year, he's going to have an outstanding vibes player playing with him. And that kind of raises the level of the enjoyment for me and other musicians especially.
Yeah, because Barney, you've been playing for a long time. You used to play at the Birdland.
That's right. Way back in the day, I was with the rhythm and blues band, the Dave Lewis Combo, back in the day when we started out there playing music around the city that was rhythm and blues music. And it was so fascinating because in those days, the mainstream media would not play rhythm and blues. So that's why our band came along, the Dave Lewis Combo. We played high school dances and teen dances and then wound up at the Birdland in the late 1950s. And we stayed there for several years.
When you first got started, you guys were underage, right?
That's right. We were underage. We started out as teenagers when we were at Garfield. And we were, matter of fact, we played for, I think I was the Washington Social Club upstairs on 23rd and Madison. And a musicians union member came in there and said, if you're going to play for cabaret parties, you're going to have to join the union. So we were sophomores in high school, and we had to start joining the union at that time.
Right. Well, too bad they didn't let the construction workers do the same thing.
That's right.
Is Butch Harrison with us?
I'm on the phone.
Okay, Butch Harrison.
Yeah.
Good Company.
Yeah, I'm right here on
got
the phone.
Got Maisha and Barney on the line right now, so why don't you tell us about your experience supporting the concert at Les Chai to raise money for the students in need.
Yeah, we've been doing this for about at least 5 years or so. I think we took a break during COVID when the schools were closed. But it's a fun event, and usually we had the kids in there too, and hopefully we'll still be able to do that at the last minute if something comes up. But nevertheless, it's been a fun exhibition for us. And the vibe player that we have is actually Brian Kirk, who usually plays the drums too. He's an outstanding drummer, but he's a really good vibe player also, and also an educator down at Seattle College. And so, you know, it's kind of fun for us to do this, and of course, you know, to spread the music and, you know, and give the kids an idea of what's the possibilities and, you know, that can come through this creative art form. So it's fun to do in that aspect too, and try to get the funds up for the music programs and things like that. So, you know, I'm all behind Barney on this effort too. So, and Barney's a heck of a nice guy too. So, you know, and so we enjoy doing it, and that's what we're about to do.
Well, that's great. Now, Barney, what if people can't make the concert but want to support you monetarily? Who do the checks go to? Is there a PayPal, a Cash App, number that people can use?
Well, the main thing we do is that we accept checks primarily through the mail, and they would mail them to the Leschi PTA at 135 32nd Avenue, Seattle, 98122.
Okay, I'm gonna put that address underneath your picture on Facebook to make sure that people know how to get some funds to you.
Okay, would appreciate that.
And Butch, you play all over town, so where are you playing next, Butch Harrison?
I think the next place is Simply Soulful on, I believe it's the first Friday in May. I'm not looking at my calendar right now, but I believe that's the next date we got. It's Simply Soulful.
Simply Soulful is on 23rd and Jackson?
Right, 23rd and Jackson, yeah.
Okay.
And all right. I'm about to look up the exact date and time now. But that's the next date I got. We also got a date at Jazz Offerings in June, which will be fun because I got the whole five piece. I got a five piece down there at Jazz Offerings. And that's going to be in June the 13th, I believe that is. That's a week after our birthdays.
Are you right about that? We'll make sure we get something back on. And also, well, I want to let everybody know that a couple hours after the live broadcast, this interviews will be available on podcasts, on Alexa, as well as online. Eric, the operations manager station, hooks that up. So this information will be available to people. And then after that, it goes on to my website for a year, urbanforumnw.com. So that way, what you're saying right now will be available for quite a while. So, Maisha, is there anything else you'd like to say about the event? That's not where you will see the poster and picture rehung of your, put back up on the wall. I don't want to say hung about nothing, but put back up on the wall at Leschi Elementary School.
No, just that all are welcome. And again, the portrait was originally hung because of the efforts that my grandfather did in the community, including with Barney. Barney reminded me of something. He is credited with integrating the Musicians Union here in the state of Washington, and also baseball. So, you know, there are a lot of effects of the work that he did here in the city. And so it's a chance for us to, one, remember the Black community and the central area. We didn't go anywhere, so don't take our pictures down. And then also the work that our ancestors did in order for us to live in the city that we do now.
Well, that's great. So once again, that's April 27th, festivities for Paul Barnett, coordinated by Maisha Barnett, will be at 12 noon. And then at 1 o'clock is the fundraising jazz concert that is organized by the one and only Barney Hilliard. So Barney, when they forced you guys into the union, they didn't realize they were integrating the union, huh?
No, they didn't. But like Maisha said, though, her grandfather had already integrated Local 76 way back in the day.
Okay.
Back in the early 1900s, I believe, when I read about that. And he was the first one to ever integrate that union. And so when we came along, since the union was always segregated, when we came along in the 1950s, we were told to join the Black Union, not Local 76, which was considered the white union. So Paul Barnett was the first to do that.
Okay.
Well, that's great. Philadelphia too.
Okay, that's where you.
Yeah, they had two separate unions back there in Philadelphia too. Yeah.
Well, I know one thing: we had to fight to get black folks in the construction union, along with Tyree Scott. But anyway,
The same thing was the same thing with the musicians union nationwide.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think it was that way in Philadelphia until about in the 70s, the early 70s, when the unions finally joined up together.
And then that happened in Seattle in 1958.
Yeah, see, it was persistent all over.
Yeah.
A real history.
Matter of fact, a lot of people don't know that, but back in the day when we were watching Sammy Davis Jr. and Louis Armstrong and Nat King Cole, they all belonged to a union down in Los Angeles that was segregated.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was nationwide.
Yeah, it was nationwide for sure.
Well, that's good. Thank you all for the Black history, because we sure had educated me, I tell you that. I'm sure my listeners appreciate getting that kind of information as well. So I want to thank all of you, and we'll do something before the 27th, Maisha, to make sure people know it. And also, Barney, I want to make sure I put that address for people to send checks. Check with the PTA and see if they have a PayPal or a Cash App as well. Then I can put that also underneath your picture on Facebook, and we'll keep it up there for a while to make sure the people get the money that they need to help those poor students. So thank you, Butch Harrison, Maisha Barnett, and Barney Hilliard. Thank you very much for all the work you're doing in the community. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Eddie Rye, for all the work that you're doing in the community as well, including this radio show.
All righty. So Eric, we're going to take this break and come back with the Jamaican Council General of the Northwest, Attorney Raymond A. Connell.
At Sound Transit, we not only give people more reliable ways to get around, we're connecting diverse neighborhoods to an entire system of opportunities, like jobs, school, friends and family, and to the airport. Our commitment to economic development provides opportunities for women and people of color to compete fairly for Sound Transit contracts. All of this helps our regional workforce grow and thrive. Go to soundtransit.org and search DBE to learn more.
Hi, my name is Mian Rice, the Diversity of Contracting Director for the Port of Seattle. As a public agency, the Port of Seattle serves the community, and our investments should benefit everyone who lives and works here. The Port is committed to equity, diversity, and inclusion, and to leveling the playing field. That means continuing to open doors to contracting opportunities to all, especially women and minority-owned and disadvantaged businesses. How can you participate? List your business in Vendor Connect, a database of contractors. Attend Port Gen workshops to learn how to do business with the port. Learn more about contracting opportunities at portseattle.org. For more information on operating a concessions at Seattle-Tacoma International Airport, visit lease.ctacshops.com.
Talk radio with a purpose. Alternative Talk 1150.
All right, welcome back to Urban Forum Northwest with your host, Eddie Rye Jr. My next guest is attorney Raymond A. Connell. He is the Pacific Northwest Council General for Jamaica. He also has a law practice, a family law practice, and includes his daughter. So, Council General, people want to know, first of all, a little bit about your background, and then let's talk about what it entails to be the Council General for the Northwest, for Pacific Northwest, for the country of Jamaica.
Thank you, Eddie. Thanks for having me on, and greetings to your distinguished guest. Good seeing you, Barney. I came from Jamaica in August 1972, and basically been in Seattle almost the entire time. New York from August to September, then Seattle. Attended the University of Washington. My wife is Anita Johnson Connell, and she's the brother of Terry Johnson. And I practice law with my daughter, Bianca, and my son. We have two kids, Raymond, Keith, and Bianca. Ray is a real estate developer. Is the managing director for Holland Partners. And my daughter is a former prosecutor, and now we're practicing together. Three grandkids that I'm very proud of, and that's it. Oh, I'm the honorary counsel, Jamaica honorary counsel to Seattle. And that involves providing visas. My primary responsibility would be to take care of the needs for Jamaican nationals with a green card or visitor's visa So provide, assist them with passport renewal. Americans or foreigners who want to go to Jamaica on a visit, extended visit, I can provide visas for them, a Jamaican visa to enter. Also, my job is to facilitate trade between the United States, primarily the state of Washington, and Jamaica. For example, about a year ago, we had a coffee delegation that represent the Blue Mountain Coffee, and I was able to introduce them to buyers of coffee, such as Costco and Starbucks. You have Blue Mountain Coffee in several East Coast stores, and we're trying to get it out here also. It's very expensive. It's premium coffee. And so we're trying to get it out here also.
Now, just talk about what is life like now in Jamaica? You know, we hear so much about what's happening in Haiti. And I've been really don't like the way our government has been treating the Haitians. I can't get the image out of my mind of the folks on the horseback running over the Haitians like they used to run over slaves back in the day. So I was just curious to know what is it like in Jamaica right now? As far as I know, it's stable. And what is the government structure in Jamaica?
The government, it's a parliamentary government, and you have 14 parishes, which would be the equivalent of states, and you have members of parliament, several, depending on the size of that parish, would determine the number of members of parliament coming out of there. And the largest parish, which would be Kingston, has several members of parliament from different areas. And from that, the prime minister, who would be the leader of the party with the most seats, would then become prime minister. Unlike the United States, where presidential candidates run for presidents and they win, you could have a majority Democrats in the House. Currently, you have a majority in the House of Representatives here, but you have a president who is a Democrat. In Jamaica, or even in the British system, we pattern our government off of the British system. So you have the leader of the party with the most seats who then becomes the prime minister. And we've had female prime ministers in the past, and it's not unusual for that to occur in Jamaica. The situation with Haiti, I can't help but express how Haiti is less than 45 minutes by air from Jamaica. So if there is anytime there is a situation, an uprising, lack of a better term, the Haitian folks flee from Haiti to Jamaica. So there's a large Haitian population in the northeast side of Jamaica, which is the closest point to Haiti. And there's a village, they set up fishing and they set up their own businesses and culture, and they're blending well with the community. Currently, the United States, you may have known that Secretary Blinken went to Jamaica a couple weeks ago to meet with the government for them to give some input as to how to assist with the situation in Haiti. Haiti is what we have to realize is after the slave revolution in Haiti, it took hundreds of years after that for Haiti to even get back on its feet, because the United States, Great Britain, and France all conspired against Haiti. Haiti had the strongest economy at the time with sugar. And after the rebellion, they lost all that market because the United States, Britain, and France refused to buy their sugar until Haiti repaid France for the machinery and the land and the capital that they lost as a result of the revolution. Why is that important, and why Americans should be thankful to Haiti is, if you can imagine the Louisiana Territory, and it's not just the state of Louisiana, but if you pull out a map and pull up what states currently that we have or we know as part of the United States of America, if you look at those states, which include Tennessee, Illinois, Louisiana, and a bunch more, over 2 million acres or more of land that constituted the Louisiana Territory, that was owned by France. And France immediately sold that to the United States because they figured that if a country like Haiti with a bunch of people with sticks and machetes can overthrow them, it's a matter of time before the United States with heavy equipment, machinery, and guns could wipe out France and take over those territories. So they got the best deal that they could and sold the Louisiana Territory to the United States. That's what Haiti contributed, or their contribution, to the history of this United States of America. So when Haiti is going through its changes right now, we don't look at them and say, oh my God, those people, they don't look at them. That's the wrong approach to Haiti. History should look at Haiti as a country that needs, that there were visionary people, they knew what they were doing, and the United States owe Haiti a debt of gratitude for what they did to the French. They ended up paying for it, but as a general principle, Haiti ought to be acknowledged and respected. My position personally is that we as Jamaicans, and this is what I preach to my community, need to recognize Haiti for who they are and not get carried away with their voodoo and superstition, but work with them, facilitate them to the best that they can so they can get themselves back together. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely amazing that the United States and, you know, blacks pay taxes, but we never have any say on where our tax dollars go in terms of foreign aid. Now, this is the only independent black country in the Western Hemisphere, and we see what the issues are, and it's just a lack of concern. But then again, I look at Africa, descendants of slaves in this country. Black people have been here 400 years, and yet we have people like Ed Blum and Stephen Miller and getting money from Elon Musk to try to deny us our opportunities to even get in college. Now they're on the contracts. So what's going to be next? And the thing about it is that we have a lot of people with ill will that are welcoming these two Jewish individuals in their onslaught against black people. And what I think about is, if you look at your history, the segregated blacks in the military, one group called the Black Panthers, the 761st Tank Battalion, 183rd Engineers, they freed Jews from concentration camps. And I'm not going to let people forget, they don't want our history told. It's like Ron DeSantis and a lot of other right-wingers don't want the history, the real history of this country told, because they don't want to make little white kids cry if they hear about a family packing up a picnic basket on a Sunday afternoon, taking their kids to a social outing, which would be to watch several blacks, several nicks who were picked to be hung. And so, I mean, that's just reality. And it's just like, Maisha was talking about all the land her family owned. Every time blacks were killed, and I think about 1920, two brothers went to vote in Okeke, Florida. They killed them and then killed other black folks, burned down all their property, and took the land. Every time there was atrocity and blacks were killed, they'd always take the land. So when people talk about reparations over here, they got to put land in the equation. So it's just really unfortunate. I really think I'm going to have to lean on the Congressional Black Caucus. I think they need to be a little bit more outspoken about supporting Haitian and the Haitian people. That's something that needs to happen. We have no problems with sending billions of dollars to people who are going to kill other people, like we're doing with Israel right now. You know, and this country's in the Western Hemisphere, and it's being treated like this because it's black, and because they also defeated oppressive white regime, the French, with Toussaint Louverture leading the revolution. They kicked those guys out of, they kicked the French out of Haiti. But that's not liberation. They want us to be subservient no matter where we are as black people. You know, it's like the way we supported apartheid for all these years. And now we got Elon Musk bringing apartheid back from South Africa. He's a white South African racist. He owns Tesla, and he's bringing apartheid back over here. I tell black folks, don't buy a Tesla because you're supporting your own oppression. Because this man is using that money and government money with electric cars to oppress black people in this country, including black folks who have went and died, families of folks who have died for this country, and they come back to the same form of discrimination. If you look at the pittance of contracts that black folks are receiving in Washington State, you just wouldn't believe it. You know, and then we drive by Fort Lewis with these black folks in the military to get to the state capitol and be told, no, not this time, brother, not this time, sister. So, but I really do appreciate that information, Ray. That's really was good information to have about the historical events that happened to Haiti. And I would encourage the NAACP, the Urban League, the Congressional Black Caucus. We got to stand for that country. We can help everybody else, but when it comes down to black folks, we can't help. It's like we turned our head to apartheid. The United States government fingered Nelson Mandela and told the South African government where he was so they could imprison him. So now we need to really be about being fair and being righteous. And countries that are in need is right down the street. You know, like I said, it keeps going through my mind about those cops on the horses running over Haitians like it was during slavery. So, Raymond, is there anything? I've been calling you the counsel, so you're the honorary counsel general, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I have to correct
because
that.
Of the population, we have about 2,000 Jamaicans throughout the state of Washington. In fact, I'll share this with you. There are seasonal workers, farm workers in Brewster, and they pick apples and cherries and pears for Brewster, the Geber farm. So usually about 600 Jamaican men and women would come in annually and go back. I think the number has dropped significantly and because of politics, but we're always trying to find new opportunities for farmers.
Ray, we're out of time. Thank you for the history lesson today. Thank Barney, thank Butch Harrison, Maisha Barnett, Jonathan Johnson. I'm going to spell your name right. And let me thank my people, the SeaTac Bar Group, LLC, out on Concourse A with the Mountain Room Bar, and also the Africa Lounge, Sound Trance's Office of Civil Rights, Equity and Inclusion, the City of Seattle Purchasing and Construction Services Office, and the Port of Seattle Diversity Contracting Office. And I'll be talking with you guys soon. So thank you very much for your time today. And I will see some of you on the 27th. But actually, we'll do something again before the 27th, okay? So thank you much, Eric. We appreciate you.